The last couple of speeches I've been talking to you about the path of Gyan. In this discussion on the three different paths to God described in our scriptures, three different ways of becoming surrendered to God. So far we learned before the path of Gyan, when I talked to you about the path of karma, that karma is incomplete without bhakti. You have to add bhakti, then it becomes karma yoga, and karma yoga can take you to God, not just karma on its own. Because good karma, although it's good, it's better than bad karma, but it doesn't release you from mayic bondage. It keeps you in this world, if only to receive the rewards of those good actions, but nonetheless, it doesn't result in God realization. We found something similar with the path of Gyan. That the path of Gyan is incomplete without bhakti. The Gyani also has to surrender to God. Sadhak siddha vimukta udasi kavi kovid kritagya sanyasi Yogi sura sutapas gyani dharma nirat pandit vigyani tarahina binu seye mam swami ram namami namami namami. The Ramayana says it doesn't matter who you are. Tapasvi, yogi, jnani, vimukta, like I mentioned to you in the Bhagavatam, it mentions about vimukta manina, someone who thinks he's liberated, but he actually isn't because he's only an atma jnani. I explained all of that to you. That by following the path of Gyan, someone can reach the state of Atma Gyan, which is the knowledge of the self, the knowledge that you are the divine soul. But this is not a divine state. What you've succeeded in doing is purifying your mind. But you haven't surrendered to God, thus, without God's grace, you cannot be freed from Maya, the cycle of birth and death. And you cannot attain divine bliss. So this state of Atma Gyan is not a divine state, it's a material state, and as long as you're under Maya, the danger of falling is there. And it's inevitable. If someone doesn't surrender to God, they will fall from that state of Atma Gyan. Aruhya krichrena param padam tatah patanti, Bhagavatam says. Arudha yogopi nipatyadha. Nipatyate dha. Shankaracharya also says, you can fall from that height of Atma Gyan. When Jagadguru Shankaracharya explained the Brahma Sutra, Parattu tachrute. He said, he wrote, Tadanugraha hetukenaiva cha vijnanena moksha siddhir bhavitumarhati. Shankar Bhashya. He says, Tadanugraha. Through God's grace, you get Brahma Gyan, and through that Brahma Gyan, you get liberated. Remember, I told you there is Atma Gyan and there's Brahma Gyan, knowledge of the self, knowledge of God. Knowledge of the self does not liberate you. You can't get moksha by knowing yourself, you get moksha by knowing God, by getting Brahma Gyan. And how do you get Brahma Gyan? Through God's grace, which is only received by surrendering to Him. In other words, through bhakti. So the jnani also has to surrender to God. And by surrendering, he becomes a gyan yogi. Just like the karmi becomes a karma yogi. Both have to join their mind in surrender to God. So both are adding bhakti. And it's the bhakti that results in their liberation from maya and attainment of divine bliss. It's not the karma or the jnana in and of themselves. So, you reach atma-jnana, then you surrender to God. Through God's grace, you receive brahma-jnana, the knowledge of God, and that brahma-jnana liberates you. So now we understand why Veda says, rite jnanan na muktihi. Although bhakti is the thing that gets you to God, but it is also said, without jnan, you cannot get liberated. So you need initial jnan, the tattva jnan, spiritual understanding. But not only a theoretical understanding. Theoretical understanding alone only leads to arrogance, that I know something. That theoretical understanding has to be put into practice. And by that practice, I mean in becoming surrendered to God, which leads to humbleness. And when you become fully surrendered to God, you get Brahma Gyan, and that Gyan gives you liberation. But that jnana is received through God's grace, which is received through bhakti, not through the practice of jnana.
Tapasvibhyodhiko yogi jnanibhyopi matodhika karmibhyaschadhiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yo mam same yuktatamo mata.
Gita. Shri Krishna uses very interesting choice of words here. He says the tapasvi must become a yogi, the jnani must become a yogi, the karmi must become a yogi. What does yogi mean? You already know. The one who is surrendering to God is called a yogi in the Gita. In other words, the tapasvi has to do bhakti, then he becomes a yogi. The karmi has to add bhakti to his good actions, surrender to God. Then he becomes a karma yogi. The jnani has to add bhakti, in other words, surrender to God, to his practice of jnana. Then he becomes a jnana yogi. So just like the karma yogi surrenders to God, thus he attains God and liberation from maya. In the same way, the jnani surrenders to God, thus becoming a jnana yogi, because he added bhakti, and he attains liberation.
Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritinorjuna arto jigyasurarthi jnani cha bharatarshabh tesham jnani nitya yukta ek bhaktir vishishyate.
Again from the Gita, Shri Krishna says people have different ways, different styles of surrendering to him, four main ways. But all of them have to do bhakti. All of them have to surrender to him. Some of them may have a selfish reason, like they're in distress and they want help, artha. Some of them may have a worldly ambition that they want help fulfilling, arthartha. Some of them may want liberation, jigyasu, the one who wants brahma-jnana to get liberated. And some of them may be jnanis in the true sense of the word, which means one who loves God and surrenders to God, desires God. Because true knowledge leads to love for and desire for God. Eka bhaktir vishishyate. The jnani bhakt, who simply loves Sri Krishna with no desire except the desire to receive his divine bliss and divine love, and divine darshan, he is the topmost of all those who surrender to him. So you see, bhakti is a must. Purusha sapara partha bhaktya labhyastvananyaya. How can God be attained? Gita says, only through bhakti. Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya ahamevam vidhor juna. Gyatum drashtuncha tattvena praveshtuncha parantapa. Gita, Shri Krishna tells Arjun, I am only attainable through ananya bhakti, through selfless and single-minded devotion. Whether you want to know me, whether you want to see me, whether you want to enter into me, whatever you may want, it is only attainable through bhakti. So we see that bhakti, doing bhakti, is anivarya. It cannot be avoided. The karmi has to do bhakti, the jnani has to do bhakti, and of course the bhakt is already doing bhakti. So you understand that the jnani, the true jnani, the one who becomes a jnan yogi, is worshipping God. He's not worshipping his own soul. The one worshipping his own soul can never reach God, because your soul can't grace you to get liberated from Maya. How can it? The soul itself is under Maya. How's it going to grace itself to get released from Maya? God can grace you to get released from Maya. So you have to worship God. In other words, you have to do bhakti. So the true jnani, the jnan yogi, he's doing bhakti because he surrenders to God. He knows he has to surrender to God. And the one who's doing what we call bhakti, he's of course doing devotion to God. But both are in fact doing devotion. They're both doing bhakti. What is the difference in their bhakti then? One is called abheda bhakti and one is called bheda bhakti. The jnan yogi practices what's called abheda bhakti. Abheda means no difference between God and me. Abheda. And bheda bhakti means there is a difference. In other words, the jnani does not meditate in the exact same way that the bhakt does. The bhakt thinks, oh, I'm a soul, I'm Krishna's servant, I'm his son, he's my friend, we have a relationship, he can grace me. See, there's a duality there. Me and Krishna. I love Krishna. He can grace me. He can give me divine bliss. So there's a duality. So that's bheda, right? There's him and there's me. I want him to be my friend. Well, if he's your friend, it means you're you and he's him. I want him to be my beloved. Well, if he's your beloved, he is him and you're you. It's a duality. So the way that the bhakt does devotion is called bheda bhakti. And the way the jnani does devotion is not to actually think of a relationship with God or any kind of interaction with God. He simply meditates on God's omnipresence in his formless aspect. He tries to meditate on formless God, Nirakar Brahm, which is actually an aspect of Sakar Brahm, the personal form of God. But he's not thinking specifically about the personal form. The true Gyan Yogi knows this formless God is an aspect or is established in Shri Krishna. But he's not focusing on that. He's just thinking of Shri Krishna as a formless divine existence who is everywhere, who permeates my very being. So he focuses on that oneness. That's it. Not a relationship, but a oneness. That Shri Krishna is everywhere as formless God. He's even within me, so there's no separation between him and me. Thus, there's no difference between him and me. So it's called Abhed Bhakti. It's two different ways of surrendering to Shri Krishna. The Jnani also knows he needs Shri Krishna's grace if he's a true Jnani, and so does the Bhakt. But they reach that state of surrender in a slightly different way, or in quite a different way. In the Gita, Shri Krishna refers to this when he says, Jnana yagyena chapyanye, Jnana yagyena chapyanye, yajanto mamupasate, ekatvena prithaktvena bahudha vishvato mukham. He says that people surrender to me in many different ways, but mam upasate, they're doing my bhakti, but some of them ekatvena, they think of their oneness with me, and some of them prithaktvena, they think of me being God and them as souls and our relationship. So Arjun asks Shri Krishna, evam satata yuktaye bhaktastvam paryupasate ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yoga vittama. Shri Krishna, please tell me of the two ways of worshipping you, doing abheda bhakti or doing bheda bhakti, which one is better? You have two main forms, right? Ved says, dvaivava brahmano rupe murtan chaiva murtan cha. Brahm has two main forms or aspects. One is called murt, with a form. One is called amurt, without a form. Shankaracharya also accepted this. He wrote, murtan chaiva murtan dve eva brahmano rupe. God has two main aspects. His personal form, sakar brahm, with a form, and his impersonal aspect, nirakar brahm, formless. So Arjun wants to know which is better, to worship you in your personal form as Shri Krishna or to worship you as formless Brahm. So Shri Krishna begins by saying, te prapnuvanti mameva, although both will come to me, the Gyan Yogi who worships my formless aspect, he will also come to me because he's surrendering to me. And the Bhakti Yogi, who worships me in my personal form, of course, he will also come to me. So they both come to me. However, kleshodhikatarastesha mavyakta saktachetasam avyakta higatir dukham dehavad bhiravapyate. The path the Gyan Yogi chooses to follow is extremely difficult. It's fraught with all kinds of difficulties. Whereas the path that the devotee of my personal form follows, what we call Bhakti Yoga, that is by comparison very, very easy. This is a very important thing to understand. In this series, I'm telling you the significance of bhakti, but in order to understand the significance of bhakti, you have to understand about the other paths as well, in order to appreciate the greatness of bhakti. This path of jnana, as I've mentioned, it's very popular in the world as far as the number of people talking about it, teaching it, writing about it. Especially in the West, in America, it's as popular as, if not more popular than, the path of bhakti, as far as the number of people talking and writing and listening about it. So you need to understand, what is this path of jnana, and what do our scriptures say about it? So Shri Krishna says it's extremely difficult at any time, and we're in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, our mental strength is less, our determination, our focus, our ability to stay focused is far reduced in Kali Yuga. We can't do anything for hours and hours on end. We can't work for many hours without a break. You can't listen to my speech for too long without getting distracted. We have a limited ability to focus. It's always limited, but in Kali Yuga it's especially limited. Then physically we also have not very good health in Kali Yuga. We can't sit for a long time. So we have limitations, and the path of jnana, even in Satyug, is considered to be very difficult, let alone in Kali Yuga. Now, why is it so difficult? Let's look at what the jnani is trying to do. The jnani is trying to meditate on formless God. That's basically what he's doing, right? As on the path of bhakti, we're meditating on Shri Krishna. Now, why is meditating on Shri Krishna in his personal form considered to be very easy and a very quick way of attaining him, and meditating on his formless aspect considered to be so difficult and a very long route in terms of reaching him? Think of our nature. Dehavad bhiravapyate. Shri Krishna says, you are all dehadhari. You have a personal form, you have a body. Everything, your mind relates to forms. That's concrete, it's something you can see, touch, experience. What is formless is abstract. It's much more difficult to conceive in the mind. In fact, Mandukya Upanishad says, Adrishta mabhyavaharya magrahya malakshana machintya mabhyapadeshya mekatma pratyayasaram prapanchopashamam shantam shivam advaitam. Describing about formless God. He cannot be seen. He is adrishtam. He cannot be related to in any way. Avyavaharyam. He cannot be grasped by the senses. Agrahyam. He has no characteristics of any kind. Can you imagine? No characteristics. Alakshanam. Lakshana means something. I mean, tell me something about this Nirakar Brahm. What is Brahm like? No, there's nothing I can tell you. He has no characteristics. Does he have a color? No, no color. To have a color, you have to have a form. He has no form. Is it like a light? No, even a light requires some form, right? Some shape, color, something, some roop. Nothing. Does he have any kind of personality? Characteristics? No, nothing. No attributes of any kind. You can't even say formless God is kind. Because to be kind, you have to be able to do something, right? But formless God is akarta. Shankaracharya says, udasina stabdha satatam agunaha sangarahitam. He has no attachment. He's completely neutral. He does nothing, thinks nothing, knows nothing. Because in Nirakar Brahm, all of God's divine attributes are dormant. They're there, but they're dormant. They're not manifested. Or you can say avyakt. So how are you going to meditate on something which is achintyam, cannot be conceived of in the mind, cannot be described, cannot be thought of? Now meditate on it. That's why Tulsidas Ji says, kahat kathin, samujhat kathin, sadhan kathin vivek. It's an extremely difficult path because what you're trying to meditate on is very abstract. So to even qualify for the path of gyan, you have to already be at a very high level. Your mind has to be extremely spiritually evolved in order to be able to meditate on formless God. Whereas we ordinary people can easily think of Sri Krishna's personal form. That even a child can do. Any child can do. You show him a picture of Sri Krishna, tell him, now close your eyes and imagine Sri Krishna is standing in front of you. What's hard about that? Anyone can do it. Or even if you're not a visual person, you can at least feel his presence. Even that counts. So, meditation is either very difficult or very hard, depending on how you try to do it. I'll get into more detail about this path of, about the way we meditate on the path of bhakti in a few days. For now, let's look a little bit more deeply at the path of gyan. So on the path of gyan, you're trying to meditate on formless God, and by this meditation, meditating on the oneness of yourself with formless God, or even meditating as yourself as God, you go into samadhi, a totally thoughtless state where your mind becomes absorbed in that meditation. But in order to get there, you have to be able to do the meditation properly. If at our level, we try to meditate on God as formless, we won't be able to. We have to be at the correct level. That's why Shankaracharya, when he was giving his explanation of Brahma Sutra, the very first sutra, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, he explained it, and he said in Vivek Churamani, Adau Nitya Nitya Vastu Viveka Pariganyate Iha Mutra Phalabhoga Viragas Tadanantaram Shamadi Shatka Sampattir Mumukchutva Mitis Phutam. He says, before I will even explain to you what is Nirakar Brahm, you have to cross the first four stages of the path of gyan. Shravan, listening to the philosophy, what is formless God? In other words, what are you going to try to meditate on? That's the fifth step. See, in bhakti, we just say, okay, this is Sri Krishna, this is Radharani. Okay, now you know what they look like. They're your divine beloved. Close your eyes and meditate on them. Think of them. That's it. No qualification. For the path of gyan, no. Shankaracharya says, first you need vivek. Vivek means understanding the difference between a divine thing and a material thing. In other words, I am not my body. My body is an impermanent thing, a material thing. I am a divine soul. And all the pleasures of this world, they're material, temporary pleasures. I desire God. That's vivek. Then number two, vairagya. He says you need total detachment from this world. Number three, Shamadi Shatka Sampatti. This step actually includes six things, the first of which is Shama. What is Shama? Control over your mind. Second, Dham. Control over your senses. When you have control over your mind, it means you automatically have control over your senses. So if you say Shama, there's no need for the other five, Titikshu, Ityadi, having the ability to bear any circumstance, Shraddha, having faith in Guru's words and the scripture's words. Just saying Shama, having control over the mind. And then the fourth one, mumukshutva, having an intense, tivra desire for liberation. You need these four steps. Cross these four steps. Then Shankaracharya says, I will explain to you what is nirakar brahm. So think of that. Before he's even going to explain to you how to meditate on the path of jnana, when you get to do shravan, he explains it, then you do manan, you think about it deeply, that leads to nididhyasan, where it becomes very firmly established in your mind, and then samadhi. And then you keep practicing that samadhi for this whole life and many lifetimes to come until you reach a state of total heart purification. Before he's even going to explain to you how to meditate, he's saying, get control over your mind. Control over your mind? Before you even teach me the sadhana? But how do I get control over my mind? One time a pandit from Kashi came to Shankaracharya and he said he wanted to make Shankaracharya his guru and ask him, you please explain to me about nirakar brahm. How do I meditate? I want to follow this gyan marg. So Shankaracharya knew he was coming. And there was a lady who was sweeping around the ashram and the road outside the ashram. So he said to her, he gave her 5 rupees. Now keep in mind this was 2500 years ago. So 5 rupees had some value back then, quite a bit of value. He said to her, this Pandit ji, this Brahman is coming, and I want you, when he walks near, I want you to sweep the dust so that it just goes on his feet, on his legs, as he passes by. Shankaracharya wanted to show this man who was coming to him what was his internal state. So, as he was coming, she did that, swept the dust, and it went on his shoes and legs. He growled at her, hey, can't you see I'm walking here? What's the matter with you? Showing me so much disrespect, etc., etc. Then proceeded into the ashram. And he said, Guruji, please accept me. I've read all the scriptures, and I want you to teach me about this path of jnana. Shankaracharya said, no, you're not qualified to do shravan. You're not qualified for the 5th stage yet. Oh, no, I saw how you talked to that lady outside. You don't have control over your mind yet. You have to have control over your mind to qualify for the path of jnana. So he said, I can tell you what you have to do. He said, yes, Guruji, whatever you say, I'll do it. He said, go for 1 year and do parikrama around Govardhan Hill. Don't talk to anyone. Just do Radhe Radhe, Radhe Radhe for that whole year and just beg for your food for that year and then come back to me. So he did. In other words, Shankaracharya told him, you have to do bhakti to get control over your mind. So he went for that whole year, he followed his instructions and he came back. When Shankaracharya knew he was coming back, he went to that woman again And he said, he offered her 10 rupees this time. And said that this time, I want you to actually touch him with your broom. Sweep the dust so it hits him, but also the broom should touch him. She took the 10 rupees and said, okay. And she did that as he was walking by. And, oh, made contact with the broom. Again, he growled at her and rebuked her and went in the ashram. Guruji? Shankaracharya said, no, you're not ready yet. Go again for a whole year. Do the same thing. Do parikrama around Govardhan Hill. Don't talk to anyone. Eat whatever bhiksha you can get that people offer you and just say Radhe Radhe. So he again went for a whole year, purifying his heart by doing bhakti. This time when he came back, Shankaracharya went to that woman, and this time he was asking a lot of her, so he had to offer her 25 rupees. He said, this time I want you to empty the dustbin on his head when he walks by you. She said, whoa, really? But 25 rupees is a lot, so okay, I'll do it. So this time as he was approaching, she came up beside him and just tipped the dustbin on his head and it all came down on him. And he fell at her feet and grabbed her feet and said, oh mother, you are my first guru. You have taught me humbleness and you've taught me my shortcomings, my faults, shown me my anger and my arrogance. Then he didn't have to go all the way inside. Shankaracharya came out and met him and said, now I can instruct you what is Nirakar Brahm, how to do this meditation. So you see, even to qualify for this path of jnana is a very great thing. Shuddhayati hinantaratma krishna padam bhoj bhakti mrite. Shankaracharya says, in order to purify your heart, you have to do bhakti. So if the heart, if the mind is not purified, how are you going to have control over it? So he's saying, even to start this path of jnana, your heart has to be very purified so that you have control over your mind, because to do this meditation is very difficult. To think of formless God is extremely difficult. One time I was here in a mandir in New York and I just finished telling this story. And someone sitting right in the front row, like right here, their cell phone rang loudly. And I was still talking, and she stood up, the phone is still ringing, she stood up right in front of me, in front of the whole crowd, took the phone out, and started talking. And then leisurely walked, as she was talking, out. So, obviously this was a test for me. Because, you know, that is considered rude in any circles. So after I finished, I was almost done my pravachan. So after I finished the pravachan, I asked them in the crowd, did any of you pay her to do that? That was a good test for me, and I failed. Although, since there were a couple hundred people sitting there, so I didn't show it on the outside. I had to control myself in public, right? But inside, I was growling at her. How dare you? So, in other words, I'm not qualified for the path of jnana. I have to do more bhakti. But in fact, I have no interest in following the path of jnana. The path of bhakti is much more easy. So Bhagavatam says, nirvinnanam jnana yogaha. You want to qualify for the path of jnana, you have to be purna nirvinna. In other words, no attachments in the world, not even to your own body. Then you're qualified to listen, understand, and meditate on formless God. What about bhakti? Nanirvinno nati sakti. Bhakto Bhakti Yogosya Siddhida. Bhagavatam says, you want to know who's qualified for the path of bhakti? The one who's neither too attached in the world nor too detached from the world. Na ati asakt, na nirvinna. That's us. That's everybody. We're attached in the world, but we're not so attached that we're totally blind to our desire for God. We know we need something more than worldly pleasure, but we're still, our mind is still greatly attracted to this world. So we're in between. We're in the middle. We're neither totally detached from the world, nor are we so attached to the world that we have no desire for God. So we're qualified. Almost everybody. In fact, Padma Puran says, Sarvedhikarino hyatra. Everybody is qualified for the path of bhakti. So to qualify for the path of devotion, all you need is a mind. If you have a mind, you can desire for Shri Krishna, so you can do bhakti. It doesn't matter. You can be so attached in the world, have worldly desires, be intelligent, not so intelligent. It doesn't matter. Everyone can do bhakti. But the path of gyan, no. It's only for a select few who can even qualify for this path. And then once you qualify for the path, even then your troubles are not over. You can say your troubles have merely begun. Following the path of gyan is said to be like trying to walk on the edge of a sword. It's very easy to fall off. Why? Because on the path of gyan, see, you started by basically stopping the mind from pursuing happiness in the world. But did you replace it with a better kind of happiness? No. See, in bhakti, you don't just say, mind, there's no happiness in the world, stop desiring the world. You don't just say that. You say, listen, mind, you want happiness, that's okay. I understand, that's natural. Happiness is in God, such a greater happiness in God. It's like if someone hasn't eaten in 10 days and he found an old dry crust of bread, he'll be so happy to get that, right? He's munching on that. Oh, it's so good. If you try to tear that out of his hands and say, well, what are you eating an old stale piece of bread for? That's worthless. A dog wouldn't eat that. Hey, I haven't eaten in 10 days. This is of tremendous value to me. That's how we are in this world. Since we've never experienced divine bliss, for us, these worldly pleasures, they seem very great. So if someone just says, oh, leave all these pleasures, our mind says no, just like that person clutching that stale piece of bread. No, you can't have it. So we clutch these worldly pleasures. However, if you put a fresh cooked meal in front of that man, will you have to then tear that stale piece of bread out of his hand? No, he'll forget about it on his own, right? Oh, fresh dal, roti, paratha, rasgulla, everything? He'll toss it away on its own and dig into that better thing. So on the path of bhakti, you're giving something better. You're saying, keep desiring happiness, but desire it from God. Then you'll get divine happiness. On the path of gyan, there's no trade like that. Like, let's say a child has clutched a knife and you're afraid. You don't want to fight him to get it because he thinks it's shiny, it's nice to look at. So you don't want to forcefully take it from him. So what do? Give him a lollipop or something. Hold that up. Here, take this. So he takes that and lets go of the knife. You take it away from him. So give your mind something better. That's the path of bhakti. Here, enjoy devotion to God. Enjoy the ras Of course, you get unlimited divine bliss when you attain God, but even while you're doing devotion to God, you experience ras. You experience some joy in that devotion, which you recognize that that's greater than anything I've experienced in this world. So the mind naturally starts to release its attachment in the world and desire God more and more. So it's an organic process. It happens naturally. There's no fight with the mind. You're just giving it something better. That's it. But the path of Gyan actually goes against the nature of the mind, because the nature of the mind is to desire, because we all want happiness, so desires are natural. The path of bhakti says, instead of taking your five kinds of desire to see, hear, taste, touch, and feel something to make you happy, instead of trying to kill those five kinds of desire, keep them, but just divert them towards Shri Krishna. That's the path of bhakti. See, it goes with the flow of the mind. The path of Gyan says, nope, stop. That's it. You're not allowed to desire anything. Then what should I desire? Liberation. And what is liberation? A total state of no experience. Total liberation from anything and everything. So that's, it means you're not even desiring happiness. You're just desiring freedom from suffering. Freedom from rebirth in this world. So on the path of Gyan, you're going against the flow of the mind because you're saying stop desiring. It's like, let's say there's a stream coming down the mountain. On the path of Gyan, it's like trying to pump that water back up the mountain. It takes tremendous energy, right? You have to have a good pump, and you pump the water coming down the stream, pump it back up the mountain. What happens if the pump fails? The water immediately starts coming back down the mountain. So what's the nature of the mind? To flow towards the world. To flow towards the objects of desire, whatever we think will make us happy. The path of Gyan says, nope, stop. So on the path of Gyan, it takes tremendous willpower to keep the mind in control, not to desire the world or start forming worldly attachments, and just keep meditating on formless God and enter into samadhi and keep practicing samadhi all the time. If that pump fails, in other words, the mind starts feeling restless, like, oh no, I want to enjoy something, the water starts coming back downhill. In other words, the jnani who's trying to rise up, he's trying to purify his mind, it starts to come back down towards desiring this world. So it's very easy to fall on the path of Gyan. You're working so hard to rise up, to refine your mind by doing this practice of samadhi, and as soon as you start desiring the world, oh, back down you come. The path of bhakti is like you have this stream coming down, you divert it. How do you divert it? Dig a deeper channel next to it and divert the water into that. It automatically flows into that channel. So digging a deeper channel means, instead of desiring the world, desire God. Desire God more than you desire the world. Understand that divine happiness is more than worldly happiness. It's better. So desire that instead. Don't stop desiring, just desire that instead. Thus you see that the path of bhakti goes with the flow of the mind, simply diverts the flow of the mind towards God. That flow of the mind towards the objects of desire is not stopped, it's diverted. Instead of desiring the world, desire God. Instead of desiring happiness from the world, desire happiness from God. Whereas on the path of Gyan, the effort is made to stop. No thoughts. That's samadhi. Why do we have thoughts? Because we have desires. So the jnani can enter into samadhi when his desires have been eliminated. It goes against the nature of the mind. On the path of bhakti, we don't say stop having thoughts. We say try to divert your thoughts towards God. You're desiring something, you're thinking of someone beautiful, okay, think of Krishna's beauty. See, you diverted. Think of Radha's beauty. You diverted that thought towards God. You didn't stop the thought. It's the nature of the mind to want to keep going. On the path of jnana, you're trying to stop it. No more thinking, just go into samadhi. There's samadhi on the path of bhakti also, but it's a different kind of samadhi. In that samadhi, you're thinking only of Krishna. So, you understand that qualifying for the path of jnana is extremely difficult, because following the path is extremely difficult. Even if you qualify for the path, you may fall many times. But on the path of bhakti, because it goes with the flow of the mind, there's no great qualification. Anyone can qualify. And falling on the path of bhakti, well, Shri Krishna actually gives his promise that he will not let his devotee fall who's following the path of bhakti. But he makes no such promise for any jnani. So why this is so, I'll continue tomorrow. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.